Above your heads, we're almost there. Get off now.
Come on, Doctor.
No, wait a minute. The inertia neutralizer. You know, I think the conservation of momentum is a very important law in physics, don't you?
Yes.
I don't think anyone should tamper with it, do you?
No.
No, nor do I.
Newton's revenge.
Come on.
Captain, sir.
Speak, Mr. Fibbily.
The psychic interference transmitter, sir. There seems to be something counter-jamming it.
What? We dematerialize in 3 minutes. All guards on alert. Someone is using a counter-jamming frequency projector. Find it and destroy it immediately.
Captain, do you suppose any of the guards know what a counter-jamming frequency projector looks like?
Destroy everything!
Newton? Who's Newton?
Old Isaac, friend of mine on Earth. Discovered gravity. Well, I say he discovered gravity. I'd give him a bit of a prod.
What did you do?
Climbed up a tree.
And?
Dropped an apple on his head.
Ah, and so he discovered gravity.
No. He told me to clear off out of his tree. I explained it to him afterwards at dinner.
There's the TARDIS, Doctor.
Going into land?
Well, for my money, that was spot on. And I'm sure Tom Baker enjoyed it. 21 years later, on the 13th of November 1999, BBC TV was having a Doctor Who night in celebration of the series, and the event was trailed that morning by Radio 4's Today programme. Here's James Naughtie.
One of the celebrated writers who worked on Doctor Who is Douglas Adams, author of A Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He wrote one whole series, he was script editor for others, he was in the project early on. I spoke to him on the line from Los Angeles. What was it that made the Doctor so compelling?
Unlike everything else that we've encountered, particularly since then, in big science fiction blockbusters and so on, there was a very, very human sense to it. Here was a sort of strange old man who was sort of concerned about his daughter's schooling, but he was a Time Lord traveling around the universe in this machine that didn't work properly. Was stuck in its shape as a police box. I mean, there was a wonderful sense of sort of mild incompetence that made the whole thing very real, particularly, I think, to an English audience. I mean, I think we tend to value and cherish our incompetence in ways that possibly the Americans don't.
I suppose there's also the fact that time travel wasn't seen as something perfect and inexplicable, you know, but something eccentric and slightly wacky.
Yes. It's curious thinking back to the origin of the idea, because when the BBC first conceived of this, and this is one of the only things I can think of that was successfully conceived of by a committee, and even more so by a BBC committee, the idea was that it was going to be sort of historically educational. And that this old man in his time machine was going to, you know, wander around so that we would see, you know, the ancient Romans and the ancient Greeks, and it would all be very educational. And it was after, you know, the second adventure, which introduced the Daleks, that kind of turned that all upside down, and it became, you know, a sort of science fiction adventure. But I think it's, oddly enough, that slight sort of BBC feeling that that there was a little bit of educational thing, that it was going to somehow be good for you, that it was going to be improving. Again, a very, very sort of British BBC idea. But I think it's one that I kind of regret that we've lost. And I think that was, you know, again, very, very much part of its charm.
Well, never mind the Greeks or the Romans. You've mentioned there the Daleks, now the magic beasts, the things that gripped the nation's imagination. They were extraordinary, weren't they? What was it about the Daleks that got us all going? I could certainly remember as a teenager the first episode where it ended with the Dalek sort of where the camera is, and it was the following week before you saw what it was.
The last shot of that week, as you say, was just this sort of thing coming round, and all it was a sink plunger, for heaven's sake. And the idea that you could have the whole nation on the edge of its seats by showing, you know, a little bit of a sink plunger around the edge of the screen, I mean, is really a testament to the degree to which this program was rooted in stimulating the imagination. I mean, let's face it, you know, the monsters were all sort of terrible rubber creatures, and the Daleks were, you couldn't go up and down stairs, and all kinds. But there was something intensely imaginative about it that was the thing that captured people's imagination.
Now, I have to ask you, I suppose, the awful question. Who is your favourite Doctor?
Well, I think two I'd pick out. One is William Hartnell, who was the bedrock of it. I mean, he created the character in the first place, and really, I think what he did in those early years kind of guaranteed its longevity thereafter. And the other one was the one I actually worked with, who was Tom Baker, who I think brought an extraordinary sort of mercurial energy and imagination to it.
That was Douglas Adams. And right on cue, Tom Baker joined us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
It was mercurial energy, wasn't it? That's what it's about.
Douglas Adams, isn't he a chatterbox there?
He praising you to
saying all that old guff and trying to please everybody there. I think that he didn't answer your question of what was the secret of Doctor Who, did he, though?
Well, what is the secret?
Well, I don't know either, but, I mean, he didn't say that because he was trying to oblige you with it. I mean, the thing is, I imagine it was something to do with the whole notion that we all have that from out of off this Earth, from outer space preferably, comes a benevolent alien who
yes.
has secrets, who's been elsewhere, and brings, you know, the advantage of these secrets to help us down here on Earth. I think that was, you know...
The benevolence is important, isn't it?
Oh, because, I think so, yeah, of course.
Because he was so concerned about the assistants, and, you know, in the first instance, his granddaughter, and then by the time you came along, it was all the various procession of assistants who came through.
Yeah, that's right.
And you had to sort of be... You had to be a good guy, didn't you?
Yes, I did have to be a good guy. And one of the difficulties in playing it is that good guys are so boring, aren't they, really? Because once you've established they're good, where do you go from there? So one of the things about good guys is that they're utterly predictable. And so the fun of playing it was how could you actually be surprising within those limits of predictability?
You've done a million other things, and it's quite a long time ago now.
20 years.
20 years. Are you surprised that it's still a cult? I mean, I've got a 12-year-old at home who's Doctor Who mad.
Well, I'm not surprised at all because it was such a good program and it influenced the imagination of so many millions of children. But the thing is that, you know, it has never gone away. It has never ceased. You know, I have never ceased to be the Doctor. Even when I was playing Macbeth, people came along to see me playing the Doctor. And they laughed and laughed. And so it never goes away. It's still in the world, isn't it? It was in 93 countries, 300 stations in America. I mean, I am still a very big star in Abu Dhabi. And I don't know how to turn that to my advantage.
Tom Baker, thank you very much.